joining us. You would think he Dawson, and Tony Raine, and we're kicking off our podcast, Two Pints in a Corner.
Hello.
Cam, how are you?
How are you? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, it's great to hear your voice.
Yeah.
It's great to hear you. My God.
It's been
you
so
sound
long.
Exactly the same.
Well, so do you.
Good morning, Carmelita.
There's Dinky.
Oh, there's another familiar voice. Oh, my gosh. I spent so many channel nights with you guys.
Yeah, we did.
Anywhere in the world in a crowd. Anywhere.
We've got Tim Miller with us as well today. Tim's been helping us out, kind of moderate these things. Tim was the entertainment editor of the Cape Cod Times for many years.
Hi, Carmelita.
Oh, hi, Tim.
Yeah.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. How are you guys doing this morning?
He's been really good. So we wanted to pick your brains and get some of your memories and find out what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, the memories are, my God. I was thinking about all of this, and it's like, are you there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. There are so many memories because there were so many bands.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
I just can't even imagine any band that did not play there.
Well, that's it.
During that.
And we started in on this thing a few months ago because back in 2007, when we were messing around with the internet early, we bought bostonsbestliverock.com thinking that at some point, you know, people would be curious about the channel. Yep. And Dinky spent a good year or so back then with Brad at the Phoenix and compiled the complete list of everybody who played there and the dates and times. So that's all on the website. It's a big database. But if you're on bostonsbestliverock.com, all the dates are in there and everybody who played from 80 through to 91. So, you know, as time's moved on and people are becoming more nostalgic, we decided that we tried to visit some of the positive aspects of the place.
Definitely. And that's why...
There were many positive. I'm sorry, what was that?
No, I was still talking about the entertainment side of it is called the scene of Boston. And as you know, there were so many different various styles and genres of music that played there. What I'm after is from you is, what was your favorite ones?
You know, I have always had difficulty naming favorites. I don't know why. Maybe because I was a middle child and I was definitely not a favorite. But there are some monumental shows that I saw that stand out in my memory.
Yep.
Very, very distinctly. And Dinky, I think you'll remember this one. I know when people think of Carmelita, they think I'm going to say local bands. And, oh, God, I saw every local band there.
Yeah.
National bands and international bands, I think one of the most stunning performances I ever saw was Eric Burdon of The Animals.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was, I maybe because I'm just a huge fan, but I just thought I expected him to be really old, like we are,
we're still young. And we're still young.
I know we're not old, really. I was just kidding. But I expected him to be maybe a little bit less than he was back in his heyday, and he just blew my mind. He just sounded so good. And Dinky, I know you recorded that. You recorded most of the shows that went on there. But the sound was just perfect. Eric Burdon was perfect. And I was in awe. And that was one of the positive things about the channel, as you mentioned a few moments ago. It was the fact that the diverse selection
right.
of
yep.
performers in that venue was immense. I don't think anybody's done that, did that before. And I don't believe, to the best of my knowledge, anybody's done that since.
Yeah, it's the scene's changed. That's what we keep coming back to with these conversations, is there was a scene at the Channel that wasn't necessarily led by the artist that was there that night. There was a core following for the club. So you already had a good built audience. Now when you go to the clubs, you're going to buy a ticket to see a specific act, and it's all become very, very corporate. But it wasn't just like you hung out there anyway, and you might get a surprise that night. And I think what you just said about Eric Burden's interesting, because it just made me think that in that period, that the 80s was a point where the music scene was transitioning, the local thing was huge, as you know, because you were a big part of making that happen. But a lot of those acts, like Eric Burden, weren't sure where they were, whether they were past the sell-by date, or whether they were just having another go at extending their careers. So they were keen, even though they were older. They were putting a lot into their show still. The other one comes to mind is Mitch Ryder.
Yeah.
Was another one who sustained a ton of longevity.
Yeah.
You know, by energizing again.
Love Mitch. Thanks for throwing out his name. The Detroit connection.
No, Eric Burden, going to Eric at that time period, I knew him from working with Mamas and Papas. And he was our opening act on some of the shows that we did in different places. And it was just really entertaining. I mean, to sit and watch Eric play, and then to mix Mamas and Papas after that, was two genres of music that was just one of my favourite time periods, you know, that kind of stuff. And that was in 1980, 81, 82, 83, 84. And then by 86, I come into the Channel and stuff like that and what have you.
Around then, I saw him with Robbie Krieger.
He was playing the guitar.
Yeah, at the tent. At the tent. Yeah.
And you know, I mean, what happens with the Channel is, if it was the only place in town that you could come after midnight to see the headline act, you know, because everybody else was closing their venues and closing the pubs and closing this, that and the other, and we were just starting to get going.
We had the 2 o'clock license,
Yeah, and that's why people would come over there, and they'd come from other venues and what have you. And I know that you were there all, from the beginning when you had to work and this, that and the other.
When did you start, Carm, as a resident DJ?
When did I start being a DJ?
Well, no, at the Channel. When did you come in as the...
When did I start being a DJ at the Channel?
Mm-hmm.
That's really an interesting story, and I'm not even sure of the exact year. It had to have been early 80s, because I was WBCN. But the interesting thing ended up spinning there was I was there on opening night of the Channel.
Oh,
and I was part of that very early, punk rock era, whatever you want.
May 30th, 1980, The Neighborhoods and the Dogs.
Yes. before the late Phil Hanen passed away, he sent me a live recording from the Channel.
Oh, wow.
He sent me a lot of music that he wanted somebody to have. I believe he sent music out to people like Asa, who was with him early on. But back to the story of the opening night at the Channel, that was before I was doing radio.
Oh.
And I was a student at Emerson at the time. I was working at a club called The Space in Boston, which was one of the very, very early punk new wave club.
Uh-huh.
It didn't last very long. It had formerly been a women's club and or a lesbian bar, and they were going down because there were a lot of lesbian bars in that area at the time. So they went rock, and they opened with bands like Human Sexual Response and Mission of Burma.
Right.
So we all were this part of this little scene. And then, of course, there was Cantones down the street.
Oh, yeah.
And our friend Marla was booking both clubs. And what happened was when the channel opened, we were all so excited about this new big venue because we were used to little smaller clubs like the Space and Cantones, and the Rat was smaller too, really.
Yeah.
And so we all, this was the big night, the opening night.
Right.
And it was just magic. We all showed up, and I decided I so wanted to be, I so wanted to spin music, especially local music. But I went in for an audition. Lily Dennison gave me the good gave them a good word, and I went in for an audition that night. They had different people coming in to spin, I believe, or to interview, and I was so damned excited, and I interviewed, and I don't know if I spun or not, but there was another DJ at the Space. I wasn't really a DJ at the Space. I just worked general stuff there. The DJ at the Space went and told the powers that be that I was not really a DJ and that I was a liar.
Nice.
And that I was just up. And yeah, she, I don't know why she did that, because she was a good DJ. She would have gotten a job there. I mean, you can't spin at a rock club 7 nights a week, right? There were plenty of positions for plenty of people. But I don't know why she did that. I really don't care many years later. But it broke my heart. I didn't get the job. And a few years later, maybe a couple of years later, I was at that point working at WBCN. And I was at a gathering, and Peter was there from the channel. And he, when he met me, he said, "Oh my God, I love your segues." He listened to me on BCN, and he said, "Would you want to spin at the channel? Would you want to do the new music nights? We're looking for somebody." You know, I know for some people that seems like nothing. Most people would say, "What do you mean? You're not going to hire me for a Friday or a Saturday?"
Right.
But I was like through the roof. I was like, "Oh yes, yes." So, and it was all local bands, which was fabulous. So I got to hear these new bands. Some of them were not great, but some of them were.
I remember a lot of new music nights with you there, Con, when we'd be, be more people on stage than in the audience.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it wasn't a packed club, but it was a fun night. And I believe Dinky was spinning. Tony and Dinky, I don't know that I was ever there when you guys weren't there. I mean, you guys worked. What did you work there, 7 nights a week?
I went in 85 as a bartender first. That's when I first met you. I don't know if you remember, but you came out and helped me out at Victoria Station Restaurant in Framingham.
Yes, for the diabetes.
We did a beach party for Jocelyn Diabetes. Mm. And you were very kind to me, and I never forgot.
Yeah.
I just found some photographs, actually, the other day, which I should send to you. But, yeah, and I think that's how we got to know each other. But, yeah, I was there in 85 as a bartender, and then I started managing the club towards the end of 85 when I finished at Victoria Station. And that's when Dinky came in with sound.
No, I came in around 86 with sound and everything.
System,
But,
yeah, we were there 7 days a week then.
Yeah. 7 days.
Amazing.
Wow.
And
you were everything there. You were a huge part of what that club was.
We know it was one of the better years it ever had.
86, 87 were unbelievable.
Were the killer years. The
unbelievable amount of shows. And the amount of new bands that were coming up because of all the metal stuff going off, you know, was very interesting at that time period. Like you said, there were some real good bands that were playing on there on a new music night. And there were some real interesting ones that weren't that so good in a lot of ways as a band, but individuals were in those particular bands became good, you know? And later on, you saw them in other bands that became quite popular for people, and especially the local stuff.
Well, Metallica played there.
Yeah, Metallica, yeah. The Black Crowes,
Red Hot Chili Peppers,
all it
those
goes on and on.
Metal bands that were, you know, Armored Saint, all those kinds of stuff. They all came through at some point, and now they're either completely wasted or they're absolutely top in their jobs. You know, extreme. Look what they did out of there. You know, I mean, and they're like so popular in Germany.
And the Barstones.
Such a lot of local stuff, not just, you know, the Stompers and the Fools and stuff like that. And they were excellent too. And all the other bands that were top bands of Boston at that time.
Well, you really championed that after that, didn't you?
You were the best at that.
You are the local.
You're the local lady, and not only that, knows what was going off. You know, you put your heart into it.
That's how I got involved with all of this. I just wanted to get I would listen to college radio. Commercial radio was horrible back then. It was probably like the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah.
It was just horrible, and except for college radio, and they would play local bands.
Yeah.
And I would see local bands, and I thought that there was a huge void in... I loved the shows, not college radio shows, but there weren't any 100% local shows, local
right.
music.
Yeah,
right.
So that was a big, and of course I was also into the punk too, but that was a big part of how I got involved in radio and with venues and going out and seeing bands was because there were so many local bands that nobody knew of that I thought they just brought my world.
Yeah, I think that local scene in Boston in the 80s was a lot to do with the influence of Berkeley, which people didn't recognize. You know, and punk was kind of scrappy at best musically, but because there were Berkeley students involved, there was a lot of musicality to what was going on with the Boston bands, and the quality was better than a lot of the other cities
that
stuff was coming out of, because you had trained musicians that were adapting new stuff, and people who wanted to be showmen, and it was just a massive growth factor in the 80s in Boston. There almost weren't enough clubs to play, you know.
Yeah, because the people were able to come out. You could go out and see 3 or 4 bands a night in Boston on the weekend easily.
Absolutely. And just, you know, jumping on the team, going from club
exactly.
to club.
Exactly, that was the whole point, you know, being able to... And, oh, if you had a car, you could go to the car park in the channel.
Yeah. Was that a tough sell for BCN to get them to play a lot of local bands? Did you get much resistance or was that welcomed as a really good idea?
Well, that local music at WBCN was actually welcomed before I was even there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. I started in college radio, so I was at Emerson. And I did a local show. I hosted a local show and programmed Metro Wave, which was a Sunday night show on WERS and was very well listened to mm-hmm. on Sunday nights. It was from 8 to, I think, 11.
Wow.
Or maybe 8 to 10. I'm not sure. That was a long time ago. But I went from WERS to WBCN, and then I was working both stations at the same time because I was a student at Emerson while I was working at BCN.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the time I got to BCN, they had local music covered very well, and I will credit Oedipus for that, Carter Allen.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys were heavily involved with local music, and we would see them out all the time.
Yeah.
At the venues and the local shows. So I actually didn't break local music into BCN. They did.
Uh-huh.
And when I was at WBCN and when I was no longer at WERS, that was a huge void for me, that I wasn't able to do local music at WBCN. Uh-huh. That was already space taken.
Okay.
I was the new roommate.
I was just
a DJ at BCN. You know, I was playing, doing weekends and doing, you know, their format, mm-hmm. which did include local, but I didn't have a hand in it.
Right. Yeah, I remember Oedipus, like, bringing Human Sexual Response to, what's his name? Matt Siegel's show, TV show.
Remember that?
Do you remember the song they played?
That was the best. And Pat Hearn, Pat Hearn, who was my upstairs neighbor. We all lived in loft in the financial district. And Pat Hearn, who was a performance artist, amongst many other things, she was amazing, painted her body.
Right.
She was completely naked and just body painted. And at the end of the show,
she was dancing.
She was dancing, and I don't know if your podcast is censored, but Human Sexual Response had a song called Butt Fuck.
and that's what they played.
That's what they played, and there's Pat Hearn dancing completely naked except for the body paint. And it took them so long, the producers, to figure out what was going on.
I know. I was living in Marshfield, and that came out. I would stay up late, and I was watching that show, and I'm like, and Oedipus was on, I think, introducing the band, and it was memorable, huh?
Yeah, to say the least. And so, for anybody that hasn't seen that video, it is on YouTube. It's on YouTube, and look for the lady in the blue body paint. It looks like that's the late Pat Hearn. Unfortunately, Pat passed away several years ago. But there she is with her body paint.
But she left an impression.
She sure did. And I still wonder to this day, what was it they noticed first? Butt Fuck, the song, or Pat Hearn dancing nude?
It was
something. That's great.
Oh, them were the days.
So, yeah, you were. And then you went out of the WAAF, right? And that's where you really championed your local stuff.
Oh, sorry. I'm.
Sounds good.
I'm business these days. I'm on a dog stick, so you might hear the dog stick background.
Good I was actually you. Thinking, wow, what a bad cough.
Oh, I. Seriously. Okay. What was the last question before the dog coughing began?
I was just kind of segueing into your WAAF days. And championing the local scene there.
Yeah. That was an interesting thing, too. When I was at WBCN, I got pregnant. I was married, of course, but I was pregnant, and that kind of changed everything. It just changed everything. I think you guys kind of know what I mean.
Yeah.
A woman in the business is tough enough, but when you're pregnant, that magnifies,
right.
You know, 10 times over. And things just didn't go really well for me at that point. Mm.
Awful.
I lost my shift to WBCN, and I was doing another cable show. I lost that because they said I looked too fat.
Oh, geez.
And imagine that. Mm. And then I was offered a potential job with, I believe it was IRS Records at the time, being a rep, and that fell apart.
That was Copeland's label, right?
I believe
Miles Copeland. That was all connected to the police.
As soon as anybody found out that I was pregnant, all bets were off, really sucks. So we wonder why we have protections for women and why politics is so important these days. But I let's get back to the thing.
Right.
So what happened is I sent out some demos to do radio elsewhere. And as soon as people found out I was married or I was pregnant, especially pregnant, that all bets were off. So I ended up just sitting back saying, oh, screw it. I'm done. I'm just going to, you know, I'll just find part-time work or just raise my kid. And lo and behold, out of the blue comes a call from WAAF. And they were looking for a local music director.
Oh, yeah.
And they said, you know, we're not taking you because you worked at BCN. We remember your show on WERS, Metrowave.
Wow.
And that was pretty impressive. And that's what, because I was thinking, Worcester? I'm not driving to Worcester, I'm Fraggers. That's like a late night drive. Their local show was late at night. And but little things like that, that they had a knowledge of local music and radio and bands. I was so impressed. So I tried it out. I took the job, and the rest is history. I was there for the next 30 plus years.
Yeah.
As their local music director.
You did a great job. Gave a million bands breaks, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You became the
go-to
person.
I did, but you know what
I
learned is Worcester and Boston, totally different scenes. It was almost like a battleground. So I feel like a part of my job there was actually merging two parts of two different neighborhoods of music.
Well, yeah.
Metro Boston, because in the beginning, you know, people would call and threaten me, and you're a Boston bitch, and this and that. And the other.
Jeez.
You know, and over time, I was able to marry the two, you know, or merge the two different scenes.
Well, you
which
did.
Was...
I think WAAF, you definitely helped build their audience in Boston.
Definitely.
Just with the interest in the local stuff. I mean, they weren't getting much attention.
That too.
Your show was very valuable.
They were very good to me in the beginnings when they were less corporate. As they became corporate over the years, let's put it this way. I'm so glad I'm not doing radio anymore.
Well, you know, we're the same, and I'm just out of the live thing just recently, and it's the same thing. The corporatization of the business is really one of the reasons that we started throwing the stuff around about the channel. It was still pretty wild in the 80s for all of us. And then as the big guys have taken over the years, it's just become a bunch of accountants running every business.
And that's every business.
And
the creative's gone away. I mean, Tim was the film critic, entertainment editor of the Cape Cod Times for, 30 years?
35.
Yeah, went through it with the same thing, just the corporate world.
Yeah.
Yeah, and look at the Red Sox. I mean, you know, you have to have a corporate seat to watch a game. You know, it's like every element of life these days, it's like
it's
this
corporate.
It's awful. That's a shame, though.
It's awful.
Do you miss it?
Do you
miss being on radio?
No, not at all. We do a podcast,
Rock. So you have that.
So that is actually more fun. And like you guys, I do it from home. Tez, my co-host, we do it remotely, and that works great. So, you know, I enjoy it. But I do it at my own, on my own time, you know, when I want to. And so that's a really great thing.
How's it doing for you, Kai? I'm just out of interest. How's your podcast?
Oh, the podcast?
Yeah.
Oh, it's doing great. Good. And, you know, people really appreciate it. They just appreciate that we're still doing that. And
that's
so
great.
We've grown a new audience, and we have a very loyal audience from when we were doing the local show on WAAF.
Uh-huh.
So it's very successful, and it's funny. We'll take a break and not put out the show for a few weeks, and then the numbers double when we come back because everybody's so excited. So that's really heartening.
That's great. Cool. That's great to hear.
That really is.
That people still appreciate new music, local music. They appreciate it, and you know, I couldn't be more thrilled.
Well, I think you build yourself a really great following. By being such a genuine part of that local scene and helping people, you were always there to go to, you know?
All of us did that. All of us did that. And what you were just saying about how everything's become so corporate and homogenized and only the wealthy now can go out and enjoy shows, that was the beauty of the channel. Mm-hmm. That is what made the channel unique. The shows and the bands were accessible to everybody.
Everybody. Right. That was the beauty of that place.
Yeah, it was very all-encompassing. And different audiences. We've spoken several times while we've been doing this about what was interesting to us being in there was the diversity. You know, the channel was whatever you wanted it to be for yourself, for whatever you were seeing. If you were at a metal show, there was a metal club that night. But when you'd be in there with us, as you said, local music nights. And for Dinky and I, it was that changeover that used to fascinate me from the all-ages hardcore Sunday afternoon show into a, you know, a roots reggae show on Sunday night, and the whole place would change. Yep.
Clientele would change. Oh, society would be a whole different world.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you know, it's like giving the tickets for the young kids to come in and play their bands on a new music night. And he got some bands out there. He got individual musicians that now are either completely off the wall, don't do anything.
Right.
But then they've got musicians that are really starting out, still at it, and really proud of what they've been able to do.
Well, I think the club was never formatted, and now the formats are being dictated by accountants from numbers rather than creative and artistic merit.
And that's why, you know, what I'm hearing from you about your podcast is that the people want to listen. They're still there. They really want to listen to this stuff, and maybe I'll go see that band she's just played here when they play again out, you know, that kind of thing.
So how long have you been podcasting, Carm? How long have you been doing that?
Well, I think it's been, what year did WAAF go off the air? I believe it was during COVID, actually, because I decided that I wasn't going to do anything. I was taking time off, and we have a dog business, that we bought off our dog walker a few years back, and we were busy. You know, it's a very busy business, so it was demanding. But when COVID hit, what did we all do? We all were in lockdown. We all stayed home, and my partner Michael does a show called The Young Jerk, and it's with jerks with a U. But it's a very successful show, and he was doing that from home. What I started doing was, because he was doing his podcast, we started building a studio, and I built a podcast studio downstairs in our home. And at one point he said to me, you know, you're really starting to, I was getting cranky and crabby. We were stuck inside, couldn't go anywhere, no work, no nothing. And he said, you need to start doing your show again. You're really getting on my nerves. And people were bugging me about it. Time to do a podcast. So I did. And started out a little rough. Didn't have the right equipment for it. But I'm pretty tenacious once I start something. So that's how it started. So that would have been 2020.
Yeah. I think a lot of us were doing that. That's certainly how Tim and I met. We were both all of a sudden out of work and the same age. And we started coming into a media center and doing a 3-hour radio show for OMR up in P-Town, just for the hell of it, just because we had nothing else to do.
It was fun.
Yeah, exactly.
And we had a blast.
And the great thing was we didn't care. Tony would say things like, we'd like to thank our sponsors if we had any.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
You know, that's the beauty of it. It kind of brought us back to our roots.
Yeah.
Oh, big time. Yeah. Big time.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was, you know, for some of us, that was kind of a magical time. As much as it was a dark time, it was.
Right.
It was.
Well, you're right. We did get back to our roots, and we started to explore, I think, our creative sides again instead of just chasing business, which it seems like we were all
doing
being
that.
Pushed into, you know?
Yep. We all were.
Yeah.
I hate to admit this, and I will say this, and I've never said this publicly. I've told a few friends, but the night WAAF went off the air, everybody was gathered in the main studio crying. There were a lot of tears, a lot of sadness. And I get that, people who had been there for many, many years.
Yeah.
But having stayed there over that whole course of time, and watched the decline of the station, and we just had just horrible, you know, they were yelling at me about my show and threatening to take it off the air, and I had just had it. So the night that they went off the air, I went into a dark production studio by myself while everybody else was in the main studio holding each other and crying. And I did the happy dance.
I love it. I love it. Well done.
I celebrated the end of my corporate radio life.
Yeah.
As
good for you.
I mean, it was It was just such a magnificent moment of celebration and freedom.
Yeah, I believe it. Yeah, oh, man.
Well, that's great.
But it's unfortunate that it reached that point, you know? I mean, here, you obviously, just like Tony and Dinky, you know, you're fighting the good fight. You love music. You have a passion for music. And then when it becomes something else, you know, it's a tragedy.
Yeah. Yeah, we all got into it because of the music. None of us got into it for money. You know?
Yeah, really.
I left the Steelworks for music 1964-5. You know, I mean, I would have been a steel guy because that's where I...
It's interesting that the number of people we've spoken to, Carm, that the channel was kind of a crossroads for a lot of that. That draw at that time for a lot of people looking for a home in the music business or just to be around it.
Yeah.
And the people that have stayed in it and people who've built careers out of it and got on with it, you know, it's fascinating. We've spoken to a lot of people. We're about 16 of these recorded and ready to launch in August. But Carter was with us a couple of weeks ago and Jim Sullivan.
Peter Limbo. Yeah.
Peter Limbo. Johnny Barnes, we just talked to this morning. He said to say hi to you.
Yeah.
Awesome. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Wow.
So we've had a good diverse crowd of, you know, guys from Berkeley early on, Sean McNally, you know, a lot of people have been getting involved.
Kevin, it's
all been very positive, which is great, you know.
It's definitely positive because they miss the environment. They miss going there at 1:30 in the morning to see the headline band, you know. Without pain. That kind of thing. Now, you guys are, you know, Carter was saying it's difficult as well to... We're DJs that promote their stuff, and now they're making us pay for it just to get into the door just to see these people, you know?
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, I know.
And once that happens, the whole vibe is gone. The whole, you know, especially for people who love the music, such as yourself, and like what Carter was telling me, you know, about all this stuff, he says, we'd love to go, even Tim here, and hang out with Jim Sullivan at the Swans in the Paradise a few weeks ago.
Yeah, Tim was there a few weeks ago.
But it's hard to go pay for everything. I mean, we weren't like putting the door, like we used to open the door in the channel for all these people that were like yourself, that were coming for, because you were going to see someone, and the next day you probably put it on the air how good this was or how bad it was or whatever it was, you know?
I think it turned into, there was a lot of rivalry now where it was a sense of, there was a great sense of community in the 80s.
Yeah.
In Boston, generally in the music world. You know, you fit
and
in.
We're all still together. We've maintained our relationships, our friendships, community. There's a lot to be said for that. I mean, there's a bond that we all have that is unbreakable because we lived through a magical time.
Exactly.
Well, hopefully we'll revive some of it with this little thing that we're doing and with the website, and you keep fighting the good fight.
Yeah, definitely. Keep at it. And have fun with your little podcast stuff going on, because I think...
You guys, too.
Yeah, we're having fun.
Podcast? Where can I listen to it regularly?
Well, it's going
to
be called... It's called Two Pints in the Corner, and the premise is Dinky and I were just having a pint and talking about the old days, and then we started inviting people along. It'll be at it'll be on Spotify and all the regular outlets, but the website is bostonsbestliverock.com, and that'll be updated, and we'll launch the podcast on August 6th.
Not necessarily this one. We've got a lot of... We're going to insert certain ones at certain times.
You know, we're going to drop them as the demand calls for it. So,
you know, because there could be one that needed it. The first two, it's really, we're going to drop them right together because they talk about just me and Tony yatting.
And then it kind of grew out from there. So we'll see. Hopefully somebody will be interested.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am very excited. And let me know if there's anything that I can do.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Carmen. Well, we will get some kind of reunion for channel stuff at some point. Tony's talking about doing that up at North Shore.
Yeah, I'm looking at a club up there to maybe do a reunion show.
At some point. And that's when we...
In the North Shore?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's a nice venue.
There's a new room up there in Gloucester called The Cut.
Willie pretty much opened that place,
yeah,
right?
I did some consulting on it early on, and they've been calling for some ideas, so.
It's just
fantastic.
Yeah, and I'm up and around. I'd love to catch up with you at some point. I'm in and out of Boston quite a lot. I do a lot of freelance shows, so I'm in and out.
That's the thing, running around. I'm home. I've got enough with
I'm up on the North Shore as well.
Oh, are you? Where are you?
I'm up in Marblehead.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, that's not far.
Right.
I mean, if something happens up here on the North Shore that's anything like the channel, I am so down for that.
There's a lot of people up there. That's a good
thing. No, that's why we're going to just do a reunion, but it'll also be in the Cut the Club. Because that's a sort of the clientele that's on it are basically channel people anyway.
There's a music. You know, there's a studio under there.
Full recording studio.
Bang a Song is the name of the studio.
Really? Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, it's great. It's been there quite a while. It's one of the guys from Guster. Wow. Yeah, it was one of the guys who was with Guster opened it.
And we could record certain things and, air them and put locals on there.
We're looking at it. It should be good.
Oh, but fantastic. We'll
definitely keep you posted.
Yes, I would love that.
Well,
and this has been really fun.
I can't thank you enough, Carmen. It's great to hear you.
We'll probably be yatting again, I'm sure.
It's great to hear from you. And again, thanks for your friendship over the years, too.
Yes, definitely.
You've always been there and you've always been a very genuine supporter of local music, which is great.
Which is a good one, really good.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
It's much appreciated.
Same with you guys.
Yeah.
Well,
always supported anything I was doing, and Tony, you stood by me in the hardest of times.
Well, I appreciate
that.
And that
is never forgotten.
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Cool. Nice to meet you.
Likewise.
We'll talk again soon, Carmen. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay,
talk
again.
All right.
Bye-bye. Be well.
Yeah, you too.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And again, we're out with Two Pints in the Corner. Don't forget to visit us online, www.bostonsbestliverock.com.